What's up, everybody, and welcome back to the Verzi Effect podcast show. My name is Paul Verzi, and you guys are listening to episode 524, and I am once again bringing in a guest on the show, and this is a dude that I love this dude, man. I go back with this dude in Phoenix, Arizona years ago. He's the host of The Fighter and the Kid. He's got his own podcast, which he's doing now, which we're going to get into. And I see my guy out there grinding in that LA grind. Chappelle Lacey's on the show. What's up, dude?
What's up, brother? How you doing?
Good, man. Good.
Good. Yeah, good to talk to you. Dude, it is crazy, man. When I think about it, like, Phoenix, you know, I was still working a 9-to-5, man. And like, listen, those are the real people that know me. When they know Chappelle that was working the 9-to-5, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, you know, you were super, one thing that I remembered is like, you were super humble and grateful. And I was opening for Burr at Stand Up Live. I'm trying to think, man, this might be what, 8 years now, seven, something, eight, nine?
It was 2017.
Oh, it's 2017. Okay.
That's why this guy's math.
Yeah. I'm like, yo, what was that? Like 11 years ago?
No, the pandemic has really fucked up people's fucking time frames.
So, yeah, I'm trying to think though, because 17. Oh, that's why. No, the only reason why I'm saying, because I haven't opened for Bill in 4 or 5 years. We went to a game. That's what it was.
We
went to the Celtics playing the Suns, and Bill said, jump on these shows. And I met him there, and you were in the lobby. You were working at the hotel, and you had said, I'm a comic. And Bill goes, oh man, why don't you just jump on the shows tonight? And you were like, okay, man. And you were so grateful, and you came in, did a great job. And then, I just saw you pretty much, especially a lot through pandemic, doing your shit that you're doing out there in LA and jumping on the Fighter and the Kid show, which is doing fantastic and everything like that. So it's cool to see somebody. What's really cool, and what I love, is to see somebody in this that you see grinding like that 9-to-5, and they're doing some other shit, but you know, you did something that I always tell, you know, young comics to do, or comics, when I mean young, I don't actually mean age. I mean, young in the game.
Young in the game.
And it's go to New York, LA. And like, once you kind of figured out what you want to do, how you want to do it, you make the decision to go to one of the big markets, and to see somebody not only do it, but somebody do it and thrive in it is really, really dope, man. And it's a testament to your drive.
Well, yeah. And you know, at the same time, man, I didn't realize how much of a rarity that was. I just assumed everybody worked their ass off, you know, but when you get to one of those, cities, you realize, oh, not everybody works their ass off. It's just I got to give a lot of credit to that 9-to-5 I worked, you know. I give a lot of credit to that, because that helped me understand work ethic. You know, when I think about it, like working those jobs where I'm parking cars, lifting people's luggage, and you know, like doing that for 8-hour shifts, and like, you know, especially days where you're like busy just doing that. It's like, oh, I got to go get a car. Oh, I got to get this person's luggage. Oh, I like, you know, all this stuff. And yeah, obviously that's not something I wanted to do for my career and the rest of my life. But man, like that was a thing that I needed in order to come out here and actually like make something of myself. You know what I mean? I needed that kind of like that kind of grit of work ethic, you know, because it's like with comedy, it's so easy to not work hard at it, you know, because like you're not really straining anything. You know, you're not like having a strain or like you're not having to lift anything. Right. You don't have to like drive a tractor or anything like that. You don't have to do that. So it's easy to not work at it. You know what I mean?
Yes.
But I think, but for me, I give that credit to working those hotel jobs like I did. And, you know, when I first moved out here, you know, it was even hard. It was hard for me to get a hotel job. And I worked at a daycare, you know, and I worked at a daycare for like the first, you know, year of living out here and stuff. And eventually I was able to get a hotel job, but then I didn't have to work that job that long. Cause then, you know, I was able to go full time with, comedy.
Yeah, and it's actually, you brought up a good point, because if you go to the gym, right, if you go to the gym and you work out, you're going to feel the pain in your muscles and that whole no pain, no gain thing. But in comedy, I guess the pain is people not believing in you. The pain is bombing. The pain is all of the physical pain or whatever is more emotional that you would get with something else. Yeah. So that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. And
it's easy for people to not go through that pain because it's emotional too, right?
It's emotional pain. So it's easy to go like, well, I won't go to that mic tonight. I did really bad the other night, and I'm just not feeling good about myself. It's easy to say that. Easy to say that, you know, but some people are like, man, I did shitty last night. I think I figured it out. I think I know what I can do to make this material work or whatever, blah, blah, blah. Like, yeah. there's two kinds of people when it comes to this, you know, to doing it, man.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's, that's for sure. That's for sure. And I think that, you know, and it always sounds corny and cliche to say this, Chappelle, but like when you look at people that win and you look at people, well, first of all, you have to be talented and funny in some sense.
Yes.
I don't give a fuck about somebody's work ethic, because there's a lot of comedians, I'm sure, that, you know, or people that were trying to be comedians that are up every night, multiple times a night, and they just are not funny. They just are not funny. And then there are people that you're like, man, that dude is just naturally like funny, or she is naturally funny and should be doing it. So I do think you need to have the talent. I do think that you need to have you know, some sort of, you know, ability that's natural. But then once you have that, then you got to go. That's when you got to go.
Also, when you think about it, you know how many people that are out there that could have been LeBron James,
right?
But just didn't have the work ethic.
Yeah.
Whenever I talk to people like, you know, think about this kind of stuff with sports, and I'm not even heavy, and it's more basketball than football or anything. But like when you think of a guy like Jordan, it's like, yeah, there's probably other people out there that were probably just as talented or anything like that, but we never know because they didn't have the work ethic.
Yeah. But here's where it gets deeper. This is where it gets deeper.
Yeah.
Where it gets deeper is, and I learned this later. What happened to Jordan and what happened to you and what happened to me and what happened to other people that make us, something happened young, right? So Jordan had an insecurity because of his older brother and things going on in his house. And that made him go, well, fuck this. I'm going to beat everybody because I could never beat this dude. You know, I'm as crazy as this is to say early in the show, not to get so heavy, but I realized
go for it.
My father, you know, wasn't in my parents got divorced. I was five. My father wasn't my stepfather, you know. Good dude, great dude, was there for my mom when she got sick. But like, I was, you know, I didn't have a positive, like, so I kind of felt in this way, especially I wanted to do big things and I felt alone with it. If, you know, like I said, not trying to get heavy. So now what happens when you lose that security or when you don't have that security young, I was the dude who people were like, yo, watch, let Paulie tell that story or watch Paul do that. Or so my talent and gift for people to see was what made people like me and what I can do good. So when I use that, but I realized that some shit that happened to me young, and I didn't have it nearly as hard as many other people had. I'm not trying to act like that, but that whatever that was made me find something. And then once I found, I did it. So somebody like you, so you know what I think when I think of Tom Brady and I think of Aaron Rodgers, I think of those guys not getting drafted and being looked over, right?
Yeah.
And you're sitting there and you're getting embarrassed on TV. You're sitting in the green room. You got 20 something teams passing you. Tom Brady waited to the third day, sixth round. And then all of a sudden you get, now you got it. Now it's like, okay. So people that never had, I think my theory is people that never had that, for them, it's like people that always kind of not had it easy, but never really felt something where they felt insignificant or they felt insecure or they felt, I think that they don't have something that maybe me and you or people like that have. Could be.
Well, for me, I know exactly where it comes from. Like, you know, my stepfather, you know, growing up, I mean, fucking crazy abusive. You know what I mean? Like, and so, and like, not even just physically, but also like verbally.
Right.
You know, so like when you get this, you know, the physical abuse, yeah, of course that fucking hurt. But what hurt the most was the verbal, because I'm sitting here listening to this person that's supposed to be my parent and supposed to take care of me, right? And they're sitting here telling me, you're not shit.
Yeah.
You're not shit, and you're never going to be that. You know what I mean? So, like, when you hear that, yeah, you believe it. And then there was just something that just, I don't know what it was that just, you know, struck with me, that just hit me and was like, I know what it was. It was punk rock music, because it has this rebellious kind of stand up for yourself attitude to it. And I think it was that just literally made me go, well, fuck that. You know what I mean? And then once I understood how to say that, I go, fuck that. Once I understood that, it was just like a wrap for me. And then, you know, people have always known me as like this, you know, quiet dude, but I was just really good at everything I did. And that's because that was like the energy, because it was just like, I was told I could never do anything. Yeah. I was told I was never going to be good at anything. And then, you know, once I realized, I was like, yo, I'm way better than my stepfather could have, even today. And don't get me wrong, like, he and I are, like, I can be cool with him now. Like, it's different because I'm fine. You know what I mean? I can be cool with him. And this shit don't matter to me. But what I'm saying is like, I'm better than anything and everything he could have ever done because of where I've gotten to. And I don't say that to like punch him in the
right,
face.
Right,
I'm
right.
saying that because, like, you know, it's like, whoo, I did these things that someone said I couldn't do. But meanwhile, I'm also, not only am I good at the things that I like to do, but I'm also good mentally. You know, right. I'm good. Like, the verbal doesn't mean shit to me.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, think about it. For me to go up and be able to shake his hand and be like, yo, what's up? How you doing? Is like, it's crazy to most people. People think it's insane. But I'm like, but I'm fine. Why wouldn't I be able to do it? I'm so fine that that I'm able to do that. You know what I mean? So it's like, that's the, like, I'm more proud that I won the mental battle.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's like you overcame so much that you're actually fine doing that, which is actually, people don't understand that that's actually bigger and better, you know?
Oh, dude, I talk about him on stage, and, you know, there's people that'll fucking, you know, like, get crazy about it. I go, why?
Yeah.
He and I are fine. We're cool. We can talk shit.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, what's like, because people think like, oh, this is the thing that happened. This is how it's supposed to go. No, there's other perspectives.
Yes.
No matter what you think, there's other perspectives out there. And it's like, search for those other ones before you just settle on what, like, majority of people be like, you know, fuck that dude. People are like, you don't want to fight him or anything? No. Why? I'm fine. I'm not upset. I'm not sad. So, like, it's like, why would it?
It's the ultimate winning. It's the ultimate winning, man. And that's
what I'm trying to say, is like, the ultimate win for me is just what I'm doing now and where I'm at now.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I always think about that, like, especially when we do comedy, because the thing about us as comedians, we're saying a different perspective on stage. We're not saying exactly what most people think. And that's what makes it funny, because our perspective, our brain just works in a way to where we just find different perspectives.
Sure.
And that's what comedy has done for me.
Yeah.
It's made me not only search for different perspectives for what I'm trying to say on stage, but also in life.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
No, 100%. And like, I told a story before, and it was the first time that I really understood something about this, was Daryl Strawberry was on a show in New York. And Daryl Strawberry was always getting the drugs, man. He was always on the coke, and it happened six, seven times. And everybody was going, man, fuck this guy, enough with this guy. And then he told a story. And when he told the story, I got it. And what he said was, 1986, they're the kings of New York. every restaurant they go in, they're the fuck this and that, and women and partying and everything like that. And he's Darryl Strawberry. He's a home run hitter. And he said that he hit a home run in the World Series. And he said he was rounding the bases and everybody's going nuts. And he said he stepped on second base and he's looking around and everybody's going nuts. And he said he felt this big because his father told him that he's a piece of shit and never going to do anything. And he couldn't even enjoy that moment. So you got to imagine this. He's in the World Series, Shea Stadium, New York City. And he hits a home run in the World Series. And he's run, and the people are losing their mind. And he felt like a piece of shit and couldn't enjoy it because his father always said that he wasn't shit, was never going to be shit. And then you wonder why, oh, they found Darryl Strawberry, you know, snorting cocaine. I mean, now he's all, you know, now he's like, he's born again. He's like a pastor.
Yeah.
He's, you know, and he's doing good. And he found his way. But it makes you realize that. So what you said, yo, it's hilarious. This is a fucking supposed to be a comedy podcast. It's your mother. People crying and shit. No, but like it comes from something, and then you find something and then you get above it and you beat it. Now, you said something, and this is one thing that I really find interesting with you. And another reason why I wanted you, you know, on the show was because you mentioned the music and the punk rock, and I'm very, very big on the only music that I can't really fuck with for some reason. And maybe I will later, but the only music that I don't get with is country right now. Right.
Yeah.
But
I said that for years too. And then finally I've like trickled in.
I'm a huge Oasis fan. Huge. Like,
oh shit.
Like huge.
Somewhere on the wall over there. Yeah.
Yeah. So, damn. So, Oasis is my shit. You know, I like everything. I like Oasis. I like, you know, because I was in high school early high school for Nirvana, Pearl Jam, that Seattle grunge shit.
Yep.
Hit when I was like early in high school. So even though I was listening to hip hop and Biggie and Nas, you know, especially and New York,
because I was going to say New York, man, like you guys are fucking
dude, Wu-Tang,
that shit. Yeah.
Yeah. We literally in New York, you had Tribe Called Quest from Queens. You had Wu-Tang from Staten Island. You know, you had Nas from Queens.
Not too many states could say that.
No, dude.
Like you guys had fucking hitters,
and even
like
and
some then, of the biggest artists today,
and then another one from Queens. I mean, first of all, DMC was from Run DMC, but then you had 50. So it's like,
yeah.
So New York was always hip hop was always on the stations, and you always had the Biggie thing. But then you would hear Pearl Jam, and you would hear this. So like, I have this array of music that like people would be like, yo, you got like, I'd have like Stevie Wonder next to Eminem. You know, and all kinds of shit like that. That's just how, but the music that you like, it's interesting that Oasis and Foo Fighters and those things really gripped you because that was that rebellious shit, right?
Yeah. That was the thing, you know, like, and even like the early like 80s hardcore punk, you know, that like the Black Flag, Sex Pistols, you know, all that shit like was like, you know, and because of that music and having that in my life, that was the first, like, discovering that sound and that message. It was the first time I ever stood up to my stepfather and was like, nah, this ain't it.
Wow.
Yeah, I think I want to say I was like, damn, I think I was like 14. I remember. I was just like, nah.
Now, is your stepfather a big dude or not?
No, nah, he's a little guy. He was always bigger than me, you know,
sure.
When I'm, you know, being a kid and stuff. But no, he's like, I've gotten bigger and stuff like that. But like, no, he's not that big of a dude.
Now,
he's like 5'9", and then, or 5'9", something. But he was a big, he worked out a little bit too. You know, he was a big guy.
Now, have you like, is there a reconcile where like, not only are you civil, but will he say to you, man, I see what you're doing. I'm proud of you. I fucked up or not?
No, he's terrified.
Oh, he's terrified.
I saw him. I went to, my mom had surgery and I went to go visit her, you know, just to check on her, you know, She had shoulder surgery. And then my sister also had surgery as well. And her and my mom were just staying together, kind of just like, you know, helping each other out. But my sister needed help with like replacing bandages or something like that. And so this is my half sister. So it's his daughter. And so he was there helping her replace, because I just told my mom was showing up, you know, kind of surprised her or whatever. And he was there. And literally, I don't know, he just seemed so intimidated by me. And I don't like it. I don't like it. I always say hi to him. I say hi to him. And, you know, like, I actually feel bad that he's intimidated by me, because it's like, that's not what I'm trying to do. Even though I know that's his insecurity and that's what he has to deal with. It's still not like, that doesn't make me feel good. It doesn't make me feel like, yeah, fucking.
You don't want that. You don't want that feeling.
Oh, man, that's an ugly feeling. You know, like,
and that's why you're bro. And that's why, honestly, that's why you're successful, Chappelle. The reason why, because you got that out of your heart through your success and hard work, and you're overcoming. That for you, you just want it to be love wherever, like, you know, and yeah. that's amazing, man. That's amazing.
Yeah, like, it'll go, he'll say hi to me, but he's like, he can't even look me in the eyes. You know what I mean? It's like that bad, you know, like, and it does kind of suck, because it's like, I don't know if he's ready for that type of conversation to be like, but I am. I'm like, if you want to talk about it, we can fucking talk it out. Like, I'd rather dialogue than.
Yeah,
you know, anything, you know, than not say anything. But you know, and people don't, and most people don't know this about me, but my last name is Harris. I actually just got it changed officially or whatever, but my last name is Harris, and but I go by Chappelle Lacey. Harris is his last name, stepfather's. And so I want to say, like, fucking, I don't know, like 12, 13 years ago or something like that, I stopped going by Chappelle Harris. And that was out of spite, you know. And I was just like going by Chappelle Lacey. That was out of spite, because I'm like, yo, fuck that dude, whatever, blah, blah, blah. But as I've gotten older, and this is what made me like officially change it, it's like, man, I've molded myself into this dude. I've, you know, this dude, Chappelle Lacey, is what I've like done. You know, this was, you know, because I didn't feel like, and obviously, I didn't feel like I got the parenting that I, a person should, a child sure. should.
Yep.
And so once I started going by Chappelle Lacey, you know, over the years, I realized I've developed myself into something that, like, I'm super proud of. And it's like, yeah, that's Chappelle Lacey. You know what I mean? So that's why I changed it. It used to be out of spite. This feeling right. for him, but then once I realized, I was like, yo, I did that. It has nothing to do with him. It has to do with what I've done, you know.
Yeah, you know, it makes me feel like that Goodwill Hunting scene where, like, he's like, it's not your fault. Well, even though it is his fault, I feel like if you just said that to him, he would break the fuck down and just
Oh dude, if I said, oh man, his heart would fucking break. Dude,
if you walked up to him, I was like, hey man, I forgive you, and you hugged him, he would fucking
And it's so funny, because him and my mom aren't together anymore. They haven't been together for years. But they still see each other. I have a brother that's special needs, one of my younger brothers, special needs. And so, like, whenever doctor's appointments or anything, you know, that he needs to, you know, that he needs to be attended for, they see each other because of that. But yeah, like, he'll always ask my mom, like, you know, I go, yo, he could just ask me.
Yeah.
And I go, and I haven't seen him in years. I haven't ran into him in years. I mean, the last time I saw him, yeah, probably like 8 years ago or something like that. But, you know, seeing him recently, it's just like, hey, man, like, you know, I even gave him a hug, you know, but he's still like, he just, it's like he like kind of cowers down. And I know, that's probably guilt or whatever. Yeah. I mean, I can't be the one to define that. Because it's his story. I feel like if I said it, yeah, it might, I don't know how it would turn out. It might break his fucking heart. But also, it's like, dude, it's okay. Like,
yeah.
Like, you know, like, listen, I understood a lot of things about him. I understood, like, his past. Like, he didn't have the greatest childhood. His father left him. He don't know his father at all. His father straight up, like, just fucking, you know, deuces on him. And so, you know, at one point in time, you'd always say, like, yeah, like, I was a good dad. You know, I was a good dad. And, you know, and I used to get so pissed off at that. But then I realized, I was like, of course he thinks he's a good dad.
Compared to what he saw.
Compared to what he saw.
Yeah.
His father wasn't around.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
so the fact that he was there.
Yeah.
I mean, shitty job. See, he did a shitty job. But
but it's funny because the perspective,
that's like showing, you just show up for work and you're just bad at it.
You're like, yo, I showed up.
I'm here.
I'm here. Like, I'm sitting here. That's hilarious.
No, I fucking already swept over there. I did it.
I was only 5 minutes late. The fuck? No. It is, man. It's perspective. It's like, it really is. Like, my wife said something to me and she started crying and she's like, when I see you with Sophia, my daughter, she's like, you're such a great father. And then she kind of said, like, you know, it's not always like that. And then got upset. And I'm like, but I think unfortunately what happens is one of two things happens when you have a bad parent. You either become the bad parent or you're so much better and overcompensate. And luckily that's what I'm doing. Like, my kids are, you know, I'm like, I don't even want to leave the house sometimes. Yeah. Like, I got to go out tonight. I got to do a couple shows. I just want to be with my kids, watching movies, hugging them, telling them I love them, telling them how strong they are, how great they are, giving them the confidence. Cause I didn't have that shit. And I know how important that is.
Oh yeah. You know? I think, real love. Yeah. Man. Guys like you and I, like, I don't have any kids yet, but, like, you know, I mean, I was really loved at that daycare that I worked at. The people would write fucking reviews about me, you know, at the daycare. But it's just like, I understand. I'm like, these are kids. Like, you gotta let kids be kids because I wasn't allowed to be a kid.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I wasn't allowed, like I liked skateboarding. He didn't like the fact that I skateboarded. You know, he would break my skateboards and shit. I like playing fucking music. You know, like, he would rip off the posters of bands that I like, you know, in my room and shit. And so it's so funny because I have so many posters now. And people are like, why do you have so many posters? Long fucking story. But I got to explain to you why. Just accept that I have a lot of posters. It's just like, it's just like, come on.
Yeah, don't fuck with my Kurt Cobain poster. Yeah,
it's like, oh my God, my dad used to rhythm, you know. But anyways, but you know, I want to give the, you know, children, you know, hopefully I, you know, get to have kids one day. I want to give them, better than what I had, because I know what it's like to not have a childhood.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I know what it's like to, like, fucking, like, I ran away all the time. You know, I don't want my kids to ever have to run away from me because I'm a shitty fucking parent. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want that to, like, that's not a good feeling. Like, imagine if your daughter just, like, fuck this, I'm running away. No, that's like, why you need to run away? You know see what I'm saying? Like, when you put that into perspective, it makes you go, whoa.
I can't even imagine.
Want that fucking,
no, yeah, you couldn't even imagine. Yeah.
You know, and that's the thing. It's like, it's like what's going on at home. You know, that's why I think about with everybody in this world, man. I know our world is a little bit crazy, but also I do think it's great. You know, like, when you think about, and I hate talking, I hate even, like, giving it, like, entertaining even that much. But when you think about, like, the cancel culture and the way people react to things, you know, I think about this shit all the time. Like, I'm like, man, if people just understood forgiveness in a way, like my hopes is, like, I want to see my stepfather be better. I don't know how much how he is now because I'm not around him. But I would love for him to see him be better. Like, my biological father, I reconnected with him at 29. I'm 35 now. Yeah. I reconnected with him at 29. He did 17 years in prison, drug dealing, game banging, attempted murder, like, just going hard. Maybe because of, I don't know. But
but anyway, I love how you said going hard, like he's at a party.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, he went hard, man. He went in.
Yeah, he went hard, you know. Yeah, just like, yeah, he was drinking and shit. Just like, partying every night. No, yeah, I know, right? Yeah, no. He did damage, is what he fucking did.
Yeah, he went in.
But anyways, but there was this thing to me, like, where it was like, I was like, why wouldn't I fucking reach out to him? I'm like, man, all I know is that he did serve his time. I knew that much. I don't know how he is, but I was like, it doesn't hurt to fucking reach out and check and see. You know, he served his time, you know, but we'll see. Like, if it's not a good experience, then I can just leave it at, like, hey, it wasn't a good experience. I hope the best for him. You know what I mean? But I would never know that if I didn't reach out to him. You know what I mean? And he was kind of set on me not reaching out to him because he was like, man, I left you. Like, I just went straight to gangbanging and drug dealing and, you know, doing all the shit. And, you know, he was just like, he goes, I understand if you don't want nothing to do with me at all. But then it's like, you know, I don't think that like helps our world when it's like,
No,
I got to shun him because he did this thing years ago. Even though he had, like, at the time when I reconnected with him, he had been out of prison 10 years at that point. He had been out for like 10 years. So it's like, you know, that's already, I mean, isn't that a sign right there?
Yeah.
Isn't that like enough? Like, that isn't that enough to, like, you know, I don't know. I'm not saying like, you know, people don't do bad things, but also like people do make mistakes. And a lot of times people don't understand, you know, and you don't know where that person is coming from, you know? So it's like, I'd rather have to sit down and have dialogue with my dad than to just shun him out because he was a bad dude and drug dealed and, you know, all that shit, you know, like it, I don't know that I've seen better result by having this perspective, you know. Not everybody fucking understands that shit because they're like, because they're so upset and they act off emotion. But I'm like, nah, break it down, break everything fucking down, break it down.
Yeah,
you know,
if everybody had your perspective, man, it would be, you know,
a different world.
It would be a different world. And not everybody's got the maturity or the capacity to do that. And I think that's great. Let's talk about the when you got out to L.A., the Fighter and the Kid podcast. You know, what's funny is after I did the show, I was like in some lunch spot in Connecticut. Someone was like, you know, recognized me and they were like, oh, man. And I was like, Fighter and the Kid. So like the show does great. How did you get with them?
I met them. Shit, when the fuck did I meet them? I met them a little bit before I met you and Bill.
In Arizona.
They were doing the stand up live and they were staying at the hotel I was working at.
Oh.
But I didn't meet them directly at the hotel. I met them in passing.
Okay.
Because I was doing an early show at stand up live and they were doing a late show. So like I had met them, like, you know, in passing, chopped it up with them. Both of them gave me their numbers and were like, yo, hit us up anytime you're in LA. And I tell you what, like there's a lot of people that say that shit
and don't, you know, mean
where
it,
they do that and don't mean it, but they actually meant it.
Yeah.
So I've already had this like foundation with them since like 2016 or whatever. And you know, it just, you know, Bill. Just, and then I also did I was on King of the Sting. And so they already had me, I was already in the mix. So it kind of just like the world just meshed, you know?
Right.
So,
like it just evolved naturally. Yeah.
Evolved naturally.
That, you know? No, dude, that's fucking.
Yeah. And that's done. That's, and listen, I got to give, you know, biggest, utmost respect to Brendan Schaub, you know, specifically because he, you know what I mean, the things he's like helped me out with is fucking, you know, absolutely insane. Like, he just, like, especially in our community of comedy, like, it's kind of dog eat dog. Like, you know, a lot of people are like every man for themselves, you know, but like, he's just like wherever he can, like, he'll help you out wherever he fucking can. You know what I mean? Especially if he sees that you know, you got something going on and you got some talent and whatever, like, he, you know, you know, but it's been a big, big help to my career. Like, even, you know, just for, you know, something as simple as, like, you know, him taking me on the road with him and, you know, featuring for him, and then, you know, me doing really well opening for him. The clubs are like, yo, we got to get you out here. Like, you headline too. And I'm like, yeah, fuck yeah, let's do it. So, like, that's been, like, a glorious thing. And, you know, he really helps me, like, to, you know, be able to springboard,
yeah,
you know, and have my own shit, you know. He helped me create Chappelle's World, my new podcast and stuff like that. So it's like, you know, I get a lot of props and a lot of respect to that dude, you know, for helping me out with that, you know.
Yeah, no, man, it's amazing in this business when you look and, like, you see what people do, like, and like, when you look at the tree, you know, the way they say coaching tree, where you look at, like, Rodney Dangerfield, and you look at, it was like, a lot of people think Rodney Dangerfield was just Sam Kinison. Rodney Dangerfield, yeah, it was Saget, rest his soul. It was,
yeah,
it was, you know, he put Domerere on, he put Seinfeld on, he put Roseanne Barr, all these different people. And dude, then you see what Joe Rogan does for people. And I remember when I was coming up, and Bill Burr saw me at a spot in Jersey and was like, hey, come with me. And then, yeah, I started working with him. And so, like, what it is I think, when, like, we were talking earlier, like, to have this come full circle, when you have talent and you're working hard and you're doing something,
yeah,
the real ones see it. And you know, sometimes we think, oh, it's going to be some gatekeeper, but sometimes it's a comic, or sometimes it's somebody who, you know, sometimes a comic, hey man,
yeah,
you know, that's really what it is. So it's always amazing.
Oh,
to
dude, when Bill gave me that opportunity, opening for him in back home in Arizona, what that did for me, like, in my hometown, gave me, like, one, a lot of people, it put a lot of eyes on me, and the clubs were just, like, giving me so much work after that.
Yeah.
It was like I was getting, you know, the amount of club work on big, big fucking shows at those clubs, you know, like, most cats, yeah, like didn't get that opportunity or whatever. But, like, that, like, just, you know, Bill giving me the opportunity to open and me actually doing good on the shows, it was just like, yo, we gotta get this guy in here to host or feature whenever, you know, headliners don't bring anybody. And yeah, so, like, that grind, you know, that did so much for me. And then fast forward to moving it to out here, like, when I did get the opportunity to go up to Store, Laugh Factory, Hollywood Improv, already knew club environment. You know what I mean? So, yes, I already knew how to get on these stages, and, like, but that was based off of, like, Bill Burr giving me that opportunity.
Yeah, but it's also a testament to you because of delivering. So it's like, you know, if somebody throws, yeah, you a, you know what I mean? Like, if Kobe Bryant says, hey, rest his soul, got to say that shit so much, yeah, yeah, it's ridiculous. But today's 2 years. Yeah, but if Kobe Bryant go, you know, that's what he did to Devin Booker. But the reason why is because he sees something. So if they go, yo, I want to run with you, it's a testament. It's a testament to you. So where are you from? You're from Phoenix?
Yeah. Yep. Born and raised.
You're born and raised in Arizona.
So a suburb, Mesa. Yeah, but, like, it's a Phoenix area.
And so your father, your biological father, that's where he's from too.
Yep.
Okay, yep, so you're all
my family.
So you're Arizona kid, born and raised.
Born and raised, yep.
Okay. No, that's dope, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, we gotta I know you gotta run, man. We gotta continue this. I'm gonna be out in LA, so we'll do, yeah, something.
Yeah, holla at us, man. You gotta come by the new studio and shit or whatever. I'm pretty sure, yeah, you come on the fucking show and shit. We'll fucking sit down and talk about your Italian father. Italian,
yeah,
heritage.
Yeah, yeah, no, man. There's
those stories,
a lot.
Those stories still crack me the fuck up, dude. I think about that all the time. Said, "God, got a fucking Toyota."
I'm gonna send you I'm gonna send you a clip. Send me your phone number on the gram, and I'll send you a new clip of the new special coming out. But
dude, I would love to see it,
Chappelle. No. Chappelle Lacey, Appreciate it, man. You have any dates you have any dates coming up that people could go and see you?
Yeah, February 25th and 26th, I'll be in Kansas City, Missouri at the Comedy Club of Kansas City. That's like the one I'm, you know, pushing right now. Yeah. So, yeah.
Okay.
Come see me in Kansas City.
Okay, go see him in Kansas City. Guys, I'm going to be at the Fairfield Comedy Club February 4th and 5th. I'm doing one night only February 24th at the Pittsburgh Improv. That show is going to sell out. Only one show. Get those tickets. And for Austin, Texas, Rhode Island, and Tampa, go to paulverzi.com. Check out the YouTube channel and all the other stuff. Check out Chappelle's World, Fighter and the Kid. Obviously the Verzi Effect. Thank you for the numbers going up. Please rate, review, and you know, get it on iTunes, Spotify, everywhere you get your podcast. Anything Better Podcast with me and Burr talking some shit about sports. Get it, all that. I appreciate it, Chappelle. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you so much, Paul. Yeah, appreciate it, brother.